Hi, I'm Kim Cotola. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Cradle My Heart Radio. There are many more podcasts available online at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Cotola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts.
This is where the healing begins.
And now, Kim Cotola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you so much for joining us for this edition of Cradle My Heart Radio. And it's a unique one because I'm actually completing the broadcast via cell phone in a family waiting area of a maternity unit of a hospital where my daughter has given birth less than 24 hours ago. So I'm a grandma the second time around, and it's a very happy day for me, of course, and for our family. And as I think about all that God has done to bring me and our family to this place, I just rejoice because there are so many, I know, listening to this broadcast who may have an abortion in their past, and it's impossible to think about bringing it up within the family circle. And that was true for me for many years as well, so I do understand what that journey is like. But God, as I say, has brought it to a pass that in our family we know what happened in my life, and we know the redemption that is available to all in Christ, and we're able to celebrate new life without undue sadness about things that have happened in the past. And that's my wish for you, and that's one of the purposes of this broadcast, that we would be able to complete the grief and resolve the guilt that may occur after abortion. I know some are saying, and it's actually become popular in some circles to say, that abortion doesn't impact anyone's spiritual or emotional health going forward, but that certainly wasn't the story for me. And the purpose of our broadcast is to not only prevent abortion, but to help those it has hurt. We've heard many stories of those who are trapped for different reasons in the aftermath. But that's not the end of the story. So I encourage you to keep listening and definitely to stay with us for this particular broadcast, because we're joined this time by Lauren Roman, whose story is one that is quite unique, but also embodies so much hope and so much good news. Lauren, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you so much, Kim, and I'm really excited to be able to share this special moment with you. Congratulations, Grandma, for the second time. That's, I was like, what an exciting thing to get to be a part of.
You and I have gotten to know each other through the years, through the pregnancy help movement, because I first heard your story, I think, probably at a pregnancy center conference. Mm-hmm. And I know that you've done a lot of speaking. You've shared your story in dozens and dozens of venues. And it's one that includes great success for you at a pretty young age. People might not be familiar with the fact that you are one of the former stars of a national soap opera. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it was very ironic because, of course, on the outside everything looked fantastic, and on the inside I was suffering a great deal. I started on All My Children, which was a soap opera on ABC, when I was 19, and I had actually watched the show growing up with my mom and my grandmother. So of all the acting jobs that I could have gotten, it was just an absolute dream come true. And like I said, everything looked great on the outside. You would think I would have been really happy and fulfilled. But I was actually struggling with an eating disorder and depression, and that was largely caused by my abortion that I had had a year before starting the show. It was the end of my first year in college. My one and only boyfriend, who was very pro-life, until we were in that situation. And we were both tremendous, you know, overachievers. And, I mean, I found out that I was pregnant my second semester, my first year in college, and I had a 4.0 that semester. Like, that's the kind of student that I was. I just grew up as, you know, the good girl, like boringly good, really close to my family. Oh, we don't have to worry about that one. And I think that just kind of lulled my parents into a false sense of security, and we never really had those conversations. And so when that happened, the end of my first year in college, it just, I couldn't believe that I was pregnant at 18. I felt like a statistic. I felt stupid. I felt, you know, I was devastated and just thought, this cannot be my reality. And I called a confidant who said she could help me. She knew of a good abortion clinic, and she would take care of the arrangements. I didn't have to, you know, do any of that. And when I talked to my boyfriend, as I said, he reacted the exact same way. He was a devout Catholic, and we both believed abortion was completely wrong, but felt absolutely trapped. And so, you know, went through that terrible experience and buried that, struggled a lot that summer. I had a summer job, and it seemed like everyone in the office was having a baby, or their kid was having a baby, and it was really, it was really, really difficult. And so, like I said, fast forward, my second year in college, relationship ended, we went our separate ways, as so often happens in those type of situations. And then, lo and behold, I got this acting job, and I moved to New York at 19 to live my dream. And and I think people don't realize many times the pressure that goes into those type of jobs in the industry. A lot of pressure to look a certain way, to be a certain size, and that definitely triggered the eating disorder. But underneath all of that, you know, there was a deep sense of self-condemnation that stayed with me for very many years.
First of all, someone once said to me, once the middle class rejects abortion as a way to protect their daughters, we will see the end of abortion in America. And I think that,
that's powerful.
You know, I was in the launch phase and 23 years old, but I definitely felt I was in the same position you found yourself in at 18, just ready to launch. Everything was in place to secure my middle class future and success.
Right.
And, you know, as I look back on it, I think what, you know, how absurd to think that one baby could bring poverty into a prospering, flourishing family.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's a form of such deep deception that we,
absolutely,
you know, allow that fear to dominate us. Would you say that that's true as you reflect on your experience too?
Yeah, and that is, it's a really powerful statement and a really excellent point, because abortion is presented as a false solution, you know, and it doesn't make the problem go away. It doesn't erase it. It doesn't, you know, it just creates a whole new set of problems. And for me, I had grown up being such an overachieving, authority pleasing, you know, I was all about that. And for me, the idea of just disappointing my parents was beyond devastating. You know, I couldn't imagine. I had, you know, always been a great student and done dance competitions and sang, and, you know, I was Little Miss Overachiever, and I just could not hit. My parents basically never had to punish me, because just the thought of disappointing them, you know, was punishment enough. And sadly, I was so afraid to let them down that I didn't even give them the chance to show me love. And I had created this need for perfection that, sadly, it wasn't something they put on me. It was something I put on myself, because when I finally did tell them several years later about the abortion, their reaction was, "We are so sorry that you didn't feel like you could come to us." That was the first thing that they said. And it was so evident that, yeah, obviously it wasn't an ideal situation, but had I gone to them, they would have been supportive and they would have another grandchild right now, you know? It's very sad, I think, the situations that we put ourselves in and we cut ourselves off from potential sources of hope and support because of our own fear. Like you said, ultimately it boils down to fear.
The other thing I want to zero in on about the before part of your story is you mentioned the pressure that the career path that you were on created in your life to look a certain way and to be a certain way. And you mentioned an eating disorder. And I know that eating disorder is a common problem after abortion. We see that with Dr. Teresa Burke's work. You know, she's a mental health practitioner. And she started the Rachel's Vineyard Retreat because I believe she was in an internship position with an eating disorders group, and it came forth in a conversation, in a therapy session, that all eight of the women who had eating disorders had an abortion in their family.
Wow.
And she went to her supervisor and said, "I'd like to explore this." And he said, "Absolutely not. That's not what we're here for," and so on. And it ended up, you know, now it's an international ministry to help women with weekend retreats to have really an experiential healing.
Thing I did not know. Rachel's Vineyard started that way. That's very powerful.
And you know, but so she's a practitioner, and she has absolutely seen this in practice, at least anecdotally. And you know, I'm still coming to terms with eating issues in my life and finding help through various means, but.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is listening to this program and has never made that connection in their mind, I assume that as you're sharing that with us, that you've found some healing in that area. So was there a connection between that, or was it simply that you feel that because you were in the public eye, there was more, that was more the root of the problem with the eating disorder?
It definitely wasn't the root. It was the trigger. That's how I view it. You know, it was the trigger, and you know, my lifelong need to please. Basically, it was the quote unquote authorities at the show, the producer. "Oh, we want you to work out with this trainer. You know, just to tone up. You know, no big deal." And it turned into a very extreme approach, which then set up a cycle of deprivation and binge eating, because when I was on this very restrictive diet and ridiculous exercise program that this trainer had mandated, having the perceived support of the authorities in my life at that time behind her, it was like, well, this is what I have to do. I'm on TV now. I can never have a piece of bread again. You know, it was so extreme. And, of course, I was living alone in Manhattan without a support system and too much of a good girl to go, you know, do drugs or get drunk somewhere. And food just became the source of comfort. And as I said before, I believe underneath all of that was a deep sense of self-condemnation. And also sort of an inner rebellion against what was being put upon me and what I had put upon myself. So there was this standard of, oh, okay, I have to do what people want, and I have to achieve, and I have to da-da-da-da, and then this sort of rebellion against that. And for 5 years, really, it took over my life. And I went through those cycles where I was either, quote unquote, on track, very extreme, you know, diet, very extreme exercise program, or I was off track and compulsively binge eating. And my weight yo-yoed. There was a point at which my job on the show was in jeopardy because I had gained quite a bit of weight, called into the executive producer's office. You can imagine how fun that meeting was.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. And we kind of come to that point. I think one thing that's really important to recognize is that food and body image issues can be life-controlling issues, even if they don't rise to the level of a clinical disorder. A massive amount of women, an overwhelming majority of women, have food and body image issues. And I think because our culture, our society is so, you know, diet, exercise, health, youth obsessed, that it's easy for people to just kind of stumble along and think that that's normal, you know, and not realize how it's affecting their lives. And there are so many things wrapped up in various forms of eating disorders. I actually facilitated a group for 2 years that was focused on Christ-centered recovery for food and body image issues. And there was an anorexic who came into the group who basically admitted she was trying to commit suicide slowly. You know, it's just terrifying how those things can be expressed, whether we're punishing our body, punishing ourselves, trying to put on weight to protect ourselves from, you know, there's just a variety, as you know, a variety of iterations. And I would want to say to anyone out there listening who feels that issues in that area are affecting their quality of life, that the only real healing comes from the inside out. Period. End of story. You know, the only way to really have healing and freedom in those areas is to deal with the root cause. You cannot deal with the symptoms. You have to.
Right. It's not about the food.
Exactly. It's never about the food. It's never about
right.
the food. So to really pursue emotional and spiritual healing.
If that's a baffling statement to you listening, I would direct you to Overeaters Anonymous, OA.org would be a place to start, or your primary physician to get a referral for counseling, because this is something that you don't have to struggle with alone. And so, Lauren, what changed? I mean, what gave you the freedom to be able to recover, the freedom to be able to speak openly about an issue that many people still feel is too shameful to even look at, much less be able to discuss? Where did your faith take you?
Well, basically, when my contract ended on the show, I was there for 3 years. I moved from New York to Los Angeles, continued struggling with the same issues because I was still, you know, facing those pressures in the industry and still dealing with those internal root issues that I had not addressed. And I did start going to a Calvary Chapel church in Los Angeles that was just absolutely revelatory for me, because I had been a Christian from a very young age, but I was, you know, Jesus and I are cool. Yeah, I don't really need to read the Bible or, like, do anything else. If I got hit by a truck, I'd be going to heaven, you know. It's just really no concept of life change or growing, discipleship, any of those things. And I felt very enslaved by depression and the eating disorder. And the first Sunday I went into my church, the message was on the year of Jubilee, which is the year in Jewish tradition when slaves are set free. And I just wept. I was like, oh my goodness, how did the pastor know exactly, you know, what I needed to hear? And it just was completely life-changing for me. I got a life application study Bible. I started pursuing discipleship, and I had connected with OA in New York. It had been very helpful to me. And when I moved to Los Angeles, I tried a few different groups. I never really felt connected. And then as I started getting involved in my church, I thought, well, this is where it's at. You know, this is going to fix everything because now I'm following Jesus. And it just doesn't necessarily work that way. You know, we are holistic beings. You have to address these issues emotionally, spiritually, psychologically, physically, you know, all these aspects of who we are. And so I eventually reached a breaking point. I had put on a lot of weight in a very short period of time. I just kind of snapped. And so rather than swinging back and forth, I just went to the extreme. And it was, you know, just binge eating all the time. And I was looking into treatment facilities and went to the head of my women's ministry, who was a professional therapist, and asked for her help. And she said, you know, let's try one more thing before you go the inpatient facility route. Try putting together a program, your own sort of tailored, get a psychiatrist, a good therapist, a nutritionist, group therapy, you know, all of these pieces, and just try that. And I did. And I slowly started getting recovery and freedom in the area of those food and body image issues. Certainly wasn't a smooth path. You know, there were two steps forward, one step back, that kind of thing. But as I started experiencing freedom in that area, I really realized that the abortion was an underlying cause of what was going on, and I needed somehow to deal with that specifically. I had, you know, therapy and all of that had been very helpful, but I was like, okay, how do I deal with this particular thing? And had been wrestling with that, and through a small group at church, God introduced this woman who was about my age, young woman. And lo and behold, she was the executive director of the Westside Pregnancy Resource Center. And I was immediately, you know, just zoned in and was like, here's what's going on, and I don't know how to deal with this. And she said, well, you know, we've got a post-abortion Bible study starting up in a few weeks. I was like, sign me up. Like, I don't know if this will work. You know, I remember we had to write down goals going in, and I knew God forgave me. I knew my parents had forgiven me. I just couldn't forgive myself. And I thought, you know, I can't be claiming life in Christ if I'm still beating up on myself and punishing myself for this. That doesn't make sense. And so when I wrote down those goals, one of them was to be and experience real complete freedom and forgiveness. And I hesitated to even write it down because I thought, like, how could that possibly happen? And it did. It was a very difficult process, and I would say to anyone who's ever maybe considered that they might need healing in this area and has not pursued it, or they think they've just successfully set it aside and it's not really affecting them, there is stuff under that rug that you have no idea it's even there. And it is a difficult process, but the only way to be free of it is to dig it up and deal with it. And I finally was able to do that, got that closure. You know, we had a memorial service and honored our children. And I began speaking with their sexual integrity program at the center. And that was when I started sharing my story, because I thought, hey, if somebody had said something like this to me, maybe it might have made a difference. you know. And so whether it was church youth groups, we even spoke in the L.A. County public school system, you know. So imagine talking to those kids about sexual integrity and abstinence. But it's like, hey, this isn't what you want for your life. You know, you have the opportunity to go down a different path. And so that was really what motivated me sharing my story. Galatians 5:1 became a life verse. It is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by a yoke of slavery.
Lauren Roman, and again, it's cradlemyheart.org to find links to her ministry and her speaking and all of the various things that Lauren's involved with today. Now stay with us. Coming up here on Faith Radio, we'll open the phones for your calls. You can join us at 1-800-811-3003 here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
Safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken again, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
We are live tonight despite a replay, an encore performance from our conversation with Lauren Roman from May of this year. Right now, the studio lines are open at 1-800-811-3003 here in November 2016. And I want to talk about the changing landscape with President-elect Trump, and what this means for certain key issues in the pro-life movement. Now, as you know, we are not a political show, and our purpose here is not necessarily argumentation. I mean, it's not that I don't want anyone to call who doesn't necessarily agree with me on everything. But the point here that I want to make is that as we talk week in and week out about preventing abortion and about helping those whom it has hurt, the Hyde Amendment, for one thing, is a top priority of the pro-life movement for President-elect Trump's leadership. This is a key area of concern. It was a plank in the Democratic Party platform in the recent election, and no less than Cecile Richards, the president of Planned Parenthood, told Rachel Maddow that this was pretty much a referendum on abortion, and she said, we have a lot of work to do, which was another way of saying, and we lost. The Hyde Amendment has protected unborn life as well as protecting the conscience of American taxpayers who don't wish their tax dollars to pay for abortion services. So what can we expect on this one? Well, we'll talk about this in the news and what some of those who are following this story say to expect. And I would love to hear your thoughts and your opinion as well at 1-800-811-3003. Our pro-life resource tonight is Songs of Hope and Healing, the CD from Lauren Roman. There's a beautiful song on this CD that we've heard, that we featured on here on Cradle My Heart Radio in the past. Now, I'll give you just a little slice of it now so you'll know what it is you have a chance to win. This is Lauren Roman singing Child of My Heart.
This world was not for you to see. My arms were not to hold you close to me, but still I know you are child of my heart.
so beautiful and so evocative, and you can take home a copy of it with a phone call tonight, 1-800-811-3003 with your question or comment. And the reason I preface by saying don't want to get argumentative, I mentioned on our Facebook page at facebook.com/cradlemyheart that we would be talking about, you know, what to expect in the pro-life movement now that there has been sea change at the level of political leadership. And there are always people who do want to simply argue, and it's not productive, and it's not edifying, it's not uplifting. And so, you know, if you want to call and say that you think that the Hyde Amendment is something that needs to go away, well, call and we'll let you make your case for that if you have an argument. But that's going to be a really tough one to get across. If you're really happy that the Hyde Amendment is now being considered to be codified into law, that's one of the priorities. If you'd like to see that happen, if that for you is a priority as well, call and let us know that too. 1-800-811-3003. You don't have to give your name when you call. We respect your privacy if you don't want to do that. But, you know, the Daily Signal had a great piece about the Hyde Amendment, which was 40 years old last month. And what it is an amendment that's been attached to the federal budget every year for the last 40 years, saying no taxpayer funding for abortion. And people who have taken a look at the statistics around it say that over 2 million lives have been saved. According to recent research by Michael New, who's a Ph.D. associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute, multiple studies show that when the Hyde Amendment took effect, the birth rate among women on Medicaid increased by an average of about 13%. That's when Medicaid stopped paying for abortion, okay? That means in U.S. states that don't fund abortion through Medicaid, one in every nine people born to a mother on Medicaid owes his or her life to the Hyde Amendment. Since 1976, a total of 2.13 million children nationwide have been saved from abortion because of restrictions to taxpayer funding of abortion under Medicaid. And one of the points of contention on this discussion on the Facebook page was folks saying, well, you don't need to codify that into law. There's no, you know, the Hyde Amendment is sufficient, and federal taxpayer money can't pay for abortion, so this is just shouldn't even be a discussion. But the fact of the matter is that under the Affordable Care Act, Congressman Chris Smith wrote in the Washington Post last year that over 1,000 of the exchanges were indeed paying for abortion. They had abortion payments embedded in their services. And he said this is, you know, this violates not only the spirit of the Hyde Amendment, but the letter of the law as well. The Washington Post, by the way, you know, put that to their truth meter, their Pinocchios. They don't call it the truth meter. That's PolitiFact. What do they call it? Anyway, they give it a number of Pinocchios depending upon how true or untrue it is. So the question that they asked was, does Obamacare provide federal subsidies for elective abortions? And after their analysis, they pretty much said no. But Representative Smith responded, and he said that was a disingenuous analysis by the Washington Post, because, again, he said conspicuously missing from the WAPO fact checker. That's what they call their thing. They brand it the fact checker. Missing from their incomplete report and flawed conclusion was robust analysis of what the president actually pledged in his highly public executive order promising to extend the Hyde Amendment to the Affordable Care Act. And so Representative Smith, Congressman Smith, was, you know, really took the Washington Post to task for this, because he said readers expect better, and they should. And so, and he also notes that Americans have consistently demanded, now in ever-growing numbers, that public funds not pay for abortion. The Marist poll recently released in 2015, I think it was January of last year, found that 68% of Americans oppose taxpayer funding for abortions. And that includes 69% of women, 71% of the millennials. The younger generation knows we can't build a better future, Congressman Smith said, by paying for the destruction
of the most vulnerable among us. So what do you think about this? Is this a priority for you in your mind as to what President-elect Trump needs to concern himself with on pro-life issues? 1-800-811-3003 is our number. I would love to hear your thoughts about it. 1-800-811-3003. Hillary Clinton, as candidate for the presidency, campaigned on the fact that she was going to repeal the Hyde Amendment. And she believed that, the rhetoric stated that it served only to restrict abortion to women who could not afford it. If a woman could afford to pay for her own abortion, then she had access. But the poor woman who can't afford it doesn't really have a right if she can't access it. But it's elective. And there are all sorts of elective procedures that insurance, of course, does not cover. And especially when there's one that's controversial and violates the conscience of the taxpayers. I think that this is something, I think it should be a priority. I think it will protect lives, and I think it will, again, protect the conscience of those who don't wish to support abortion with their tax dollars. But what do you think? 1-800-811-3003 is our number. 800-811-3003. And a copy of Lauren Roman's Songs of Hope and Healing for those who call and join us on the air tonight. 1-800-811-3003. I hope when you're on Facebook that you'll go to our page. We always put up a notice about who our guest will be, and we try to also post stories that have relevance on the life issue and stories that bring hope and stories that help us to better discern the truth, stories that help us to break through the arguments and break through the rhetoric and break through the politics. And I want to say that although I was a person, and I've been candid about this, if you've listened to the show for about a minute, you probably know that I had an abortion when I was in my early 20s. And this was a decision that was driven by ignorance and fear. And I won't speak for anybody else, but I'll say that when my decision was driven by ignorance and fear, I did not walk away from it so argumentative, wishing to so defend it so strenuously as many of the arguments that you will encounter. When you take up this issue, and it almost doesn't have to become political on any level. All we have to do is to talk about healing, and this becomes controversial. To suggest that abortion might be detrimental to some of the women who choose it is a hugely controversial statement, and it shouldn't really be that way. Again, something that you will know or will have heard from me if you've listened before is that really abortion is a spiritual issue. Abortion is a matter of life and death, which makes it a spiritual issue. 1-800-811-3003. And our pro-life resource tonight is Lauren Roman's CD, Songs of Hope and Healing, asking, would you like to see the Hyde Amendment become law, mandating that taxpayer dollars not pay for abortions? Anecdotally, I've heard people say that I heard of a couple that was married in California, a gay couple where gay marriage is allowed, that was forced to pay for a premium for abortion care in their Affordable Care Act insurance on the exchanges or face a penalty. In other words, they had to pay for something they were never going to use. And they were saying that, you know, yeah, there are taxpayer dollars that are going into those funds. 17 states pay for abortion services through Medicaid. So there are some, it's maybe not as straightforward as it would seem to be, and that's why I think it has become a priority for people to say no taxpayer funding for abortion, and let's codify the Hyde Amendment into law. 1-800-811-3003. Are we ready to go with, not quite yet? Yes? No, I'm sorry. Okay. Maybe let's take a short break because we do have a couple of callers that we're prepping to join us on the air. So, and you can get ready too at 1-800-811-3003. Join us here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003.
Thank you so much for being with us tonight. We are live on this November 13th, and we have a copy of Lauren Roman's Songs of Hope and Healing featuring her beautiful song to her child in heaven, Child of My Heart. And let's get Jane on the air and welcome you, Jane. And you've got a copy of Lauren Roman's CD. Welcome. What's on your mind tonight?
I was just responding to the abortion question.
Yes. Could you turn down your radio? It sounds like there might be a little bit of feedback,
yeah.
And maybe we'll be able to hear you just about.
I turned it down as far as I can turn it.
Okay.
I'm in a car. But, yeah, I turned it off. Okay, this is the thing. I'm totally for taking care of a child when a mother is pregnant. I think life should be protected. And it's sacred, but I also think there are circumstances where a woman may have to have an abortion. And I think because I have a friend who had to have an abortion because the fetus was dead was inside of her. That was nothing she did to cause it. And so the doctor said the baby's already dead, and she had two little children at home who were 2 and 3. And he said, if we don't take the dead fetus out, then you will die. And so I'm sure there was a Texas senator who thought a woman should carry the dead fetus. So you see, there are extenuating circumstances where I think people have to have an abortion. And I don't think she was wrong in doing that.
Well, Jane, I'm not familiar with the case, but what you're describing is a stillbirth, not an abortion.
Well, she had an abortion. That's what they called it, because it was a massive tissue. Still was considered an abortion by the doctor. And that's how she described it to me.
Right. Well, medically, a spontaneous abortion is a miscarriage. An elective abortion is a procedure that's done. I mean, there are different terms
but
that are used. For our purposes,
no, but as long
this
as she had to
right, okay.
She had to save the child.
Okay, so for our purposes, the abortion is the intentional killing of an innocent human being. Now, if the fetus has died, and they need to now deliver a stillbirth, that is not the intentional killing of an innocent human being.
Yeah, but they had to take it before, and they couldn't let it be a stillbirth. They should have died to keep it in their body. See, this is the thing. If you make such a hard and fast rule, and there's a senator in Texas, and I believe he was Republican, who wanted to make that a rule, that woman could not have an abortion to have that fetus removed, if that law would have passed. I think we need to leave it with the woman and the doctor. This is a really, and if you want to be pro-life, then I think we have to be pro-life in this country after a child is born also. Because if a child is born into poverty, so we say they have to have that child, but then we're not willing to help that person. Because, see, you know, the greatest poverty in our country is with women and children. Because too many men take off and don't take care of their children.
Right, but I'm sure you wouldn't be in favor. Jane, I heard you. Now, let me ask you a question. I'm sure you wouldn't be in favor of killing a 2-year-old to relieve a woman's poverty. Why not?
Excuse me? I wouldn't be what?
You would not be in favor of you wouldn't be in favor of killing a woman's 2-year-old to relieve her poverty, would you?
No, I don't think you should kill anyone, but I think we also need to be pro-life.
But don't you understand? Abortion kills someone every time. It's just a younger member of the human family.
And how poor are in this country? Less than 2% across the country?
Pardon me?
I mean, how many abortions actually take place in this country?
A million a year.
And 2%?
1 million a year. One out of every four pregnancies ends in abortion. The numbers are huge.
Very high.
From this is according to the Centers for Disease Control. And see, the thing that I want to impress on you is that to say, you know, it's poverty is a problem. It's a huge problem. It's a pressing problem. It's a problem the church needs to answer as well as the government. The church first, right? I mean, our Lord told us it's our job to take care of the poor. But to make the assumption,
but to
make the assumption,
too many churches,
right? But to make
the money for themselves.
I'm just agreeing with you. Poverty is a problem, but to make the assumption that killing a child is the answer through abortion can't be our answer. Jane, thanks for your call.
I don't think people should use abortion as a means of birth control. I think that's totally wrong. But I think there are situations where it should be between the woman and the doctor. And I'm like 66. I'm too old to have a child. So, I mean, this doesn't... And I never had an abortion, but I find it very difficult to judge anybody else.
Jane, thank you. Hold on now, and stay on the phone with us, and we'll get your phone number so that we can get you a copy of Lauren Roman's CD. You know, one of the things that I have to say in response to the thinking that we just heard is that there's a big assumption going on here that the unborn is not a human being, not a full member of the human family. So if we assume that the unborn is not a full member of the human family, not equally valuable, then there should be no restriction on abortion. It shouldn't even be up for discussion. But if they are distinct, living, and whole human beings from conception forward, as the science of embryology teaches us, then there's no excuse for eliminating their lives to solve problems, even intractable problems like poverty. The Lord has charged us with we are His plan, and there is no plan B, right? You've heard that said. And we cannot say that the answer is to eliminate people. We can't go there. It's so far outside of what is morally and ethically acceptable. And I think it's really important that we do understand this. I'm not familiar with the case that Jane was talking about in Texas, but the syllogism that we use from Frances Beckwith, Defending Life is the book. It's a great book. You should read it and you'll be the smarter for it. The syllogism is very simple to remember. Abortion is the intentional killing of an innocent human being. It is wrong to intentionally kill an innocent human being. Therefore, abortion is wrong. And you see, there are some procedures, such as with an ectopic pregnancy, where we have to go in and do a life-preserving treatment for mom. And an unfortunate effect of that may be that we are unable to save the life of the child. But that is not the intentional killing of an innocent human being. And this is, it's not morally complex. It's very straightforward. 1-800-811-3003. And when we hear about the late term cases, you know, people scoffed at the notion that abortion is legal through all 9 months when that came up in the presidential debates. But there are at least 5 locations in the U.S. where that is so. Let's go back to the phones and welcome Diane to Cradle My Heart Radio. Hi, Diane. We've got about a couple of minutes remaining for you to go ahead and make your case here. How are you tonight?
Okay. Oh, I'm fine. Thank you. And thank you so much for your program. I enjoy listening to it every week.
Mm-hmm.
My comment was, I'm just so grateful that we do have a chance now that we can defund, for the Hyde Amendment to be, you know, established. I am so happy to hear about this because it would be against my conscience and many people's conscience. We don't want our money to go towards that. I am a woman who's never had an abortion. I've never actually had children, but I'm a nurse. And, you know, I've had an instance once where a woman called and said she wanted to have an abortion. She has five kids. She said, I have too many children. And she said, I don't want to see the sonogram though. She just wanted to have an abortion. I said, well, I don't direct people for it. We don't do them at the particular place. Thank God that I worked. They didn't do them. So, but I felt, I wish now, this was many, many years ago, now I wished I would have said to her, what I would now I think is tell her, and this is a fact, when my mom and dad had their fifth child, they got pregnant again with number six, and they would have loved to have had an abortion. They just did not want any more children. And as it turned out, I'm number six, and they are not in favor of abortion, so they had the baby. To this day, I'm my mom's nurse and caregiver, and she's grateful that she went ahead and had me.
Wow.
And I wish people would just, you know, life is so precious.
Oh, Diane, you've got to call us back next week for the rest of this story. We're out of time, but thank you so much. God bless you, and thank you for that, and for godly parents. Kim Cotola, thank you so much for being with us. We'll be here next week. Join us then. Remember, Jesus loves you, and so do we. Thanks for listening. Your support makes this podcast stream possible. Information is available at myfaithradio.com.